Blog Talk Radio.
How would you like to get the inside scoop on the secret sauce of show business? Imagine being ahead of the pack when it comes to knowing how to land that part you crave in that film, play, or TV program. Listen to the Inside Acting Radio Show hosted by William Powell, the king of DC media, at blogtalkradio.com. Search Inside Acting.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, to another amazing episode of the Inside Acting Radio Show, where tonight we will learn the secret sauce behind actor and writer Lawrence Weichner's 24 wins and 40 nominations for the screenplay to his upcoming short film, Saving Robin Williams, which will be filming in November. Now, Lawrence will also discuss his film that's entitled Videogenic, which has won at least 3 film festivals and over a dozen nominations. He'll also tell us some outrageous stories from sets he's been on. Now, let me also add that Lawrence has 3 Best Actor Awards appearing in 100 productions. He's the writer and director and producer of 5 award-winning SAG shorts, with the 6th one shooting in November. He's the award-winning screenwriter of 2 dozen scripts, including winning the 2018 Richmond Film Festival and the 2019 Northern Virginia Film Festival. Now, he's done all of this in the last 6 years. So I see that Mr. Weichner is trying to get connected here. All right, Lawrence. Good to hear your voice. Man, I'm going to jump right in. So I know that Saving Robin Williams involves time travel, and it's about a brilliant mathematician, and the director is David Langlet.
Langlet.
What else can you tell us about the film?
Well, the script itself already has 1 win and 3 nominations. So the script is doing very well. And so when I wrote it, whenever I write a script, I submit it to film festivals to see if it's as good as I hope it is. And when it came back immediately with great reviews, I had become friends with the director, David Langlitz, who did a wonderful film with Hume Cronin and then later went on and did Rutger Hauer in Mentor. And he's in New York, and I just went ahead and sent it to him. And he called me up, and he said, "Did you know that Robin and I went to Juilliard together?" And I said, "No, I did not." And he said, "Yes, we rode up the elevator every day," and he would do his comedy shtick on me. And he said, "Do you want me to direct it?" And I was like, "Well, I guess that's kind of why I sent it to you." And so, yeah, so David is directing it, and we shoot it the weekend, November 8, 9, 10.
Man, that's awesome. So talk about how you put together your cast.
Well, originally, David is in New York, and so there were a couple actors I was looking at, and we did a screen test. And we realized, David and I realized that, because of the storyline, which is the last 15 minutes of Robin Williams' life, which I had to do a tremendous amount of research. I had to read 4 autopsy reports, which I don't recommend reading. And we realized that we had to get an actual impersonate of Robin. And there's this wonderful comedian actor named Roger Kabler, that you can look up, and especially on YouTube, and he is spot on Robin Williams, and we realized we had to do that. So I explained that to the other 2 actors, and David wanted me to play the professor, which I'm a Santa Claus. I'm a homeless hippie mountain man biker Viking. Those are the roles I usually play. So I have played a professor, but in a suit. So David wanted me, so that's what Roger and I talked, Kavler, and we really hit it off together. So, yes, it's the movie is now directed by David Langlitz and starring Roger Kebler. So, yahoo.
Man, that's great. That's great. So, talk about the rest of your crew.
My crew has been the same crew that's been making all my films with me. Once you find good people, you keep them. Donald M. Is on the production side, and I have another film, Videogenic, where he was the lead in that, and I just found out that apparently I have to clone myself on that weekend, because not only are we shooting Saving Robin Williams, November 8, 9, 10, but the Clifton Film Festival is now showing Videogenic that weekend, and the Alexandria Film Festival is showing Videogenic that weekend. So I'm like, wow. can I get two more of me, please? But that's just the way it sometimes goes.
Play.
Yeah. What? What?
That's your next screenplay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's fun. I sent you that note, and it's amazing that I have 24 wins and 39 nominations that are actually on IMDb, and those are just the ones that they'll give me, because they've really changed the rules this year, and now they won't give you credit. I don't even get credit as director unless my name is listed on the film festival's website. So my films actually win, but I don't get the crossover credit because my name's not listed as director. So I think that's kind of petty, but that's something brand new that just happened this year, and they won't let me share. Before, it was very easy for me to get producer money because everyone knew that I would share the first of all, everyone knew that the film would get awards, and second of all, they knew I would share them. And now I can't share them, and that makes a difference on getting producer money. But still, considering 24 and 39, and now we just got the nomination for Alexandria and Clifton, it's just amazing that all of that has been in the past 6 years. Well, in 2013, go ahead. No, I was going to say, it all started in 2013. I've studied with almost all of the acting coaches in New York. I couldn't afford to go to Actor Studio. There's a great acting coach called Tom Todorov. And in 2013, I attended second or third class. And he said, you know, it's okay if you just want to be background actors. It's okay if you want to treat this as a hobby, as a part-time job, that you have a full-time job that you like and it pays the bills, and you kind of want to play with acting. He said, but you need to make that decision. Is it actual career, or is it just a hobby? And I was sitting there and I said, I want it to be an actual career. And that was it. So my very first movie, because I wasn't working anymore, I could now go everywhere and do everything. And I went down to Roanoke and got a part in David Baldacci's Wish You Well, which was shooting in West Virginia. And that forever changed my life in two ways. Number one, it made me SAG because I became Fred the Bailiff. So they had to do the Taft-Hartley paperwork on me. And number two, it allowed me to have a life-altering conversation with the producer-writer David Baldacci. And during that conversation, it came out that apparently at some point we had been separated at birth, because not only did we go to the same college and get the exact same degree, but we also wrestled under the same coach and then went to UVA to study law and then moved to Northern Virginia and bought houses 1 mile apart. And for 30 years, we were taking our two dogs to the same vet, but we never actually talked until I was on his set in 2013. And the only reason why I could be on a set is because I had decided to make acting my full-time career. And so it's amazing how that comes across. And after all that information came out, David and I were talking, and he didn't know that I had always tried to become a writer. And I couldn't even get an editorial published. And I had this huge stack of rejection letters. And there's a beautiful scene with Mackenzie Foy in Wish You Well, where she gets her first rejection letter. And anybody that really wants to be a writer, yes, you keep your first rejection letter because it's just something that drives you forward. Just like an actor, if you're not willing to take chances, nothing will ever happen with your career. And so because I decided to take the chance and become a full-time actor, I could go play in Wish You Well and meet David Baldacci, and he could convince me that, you know, there are different types of writing. What do you really like to do? And I said, I absolutely love movies. He said, well, what about screenwriting? And don't you wish you could have your own self-epiphanies that somebody else has to give it to you? And that's it. And I immediately signed up with the number one screenwriting professor at Yale, Mark Lapidula. And through him is how I met David Langlitz, who's now directing Saving Robin Williams. So it's amazing if you just let yourself kind of flow down the river of life. Yeah, you'll hit a lot of rocks, but maybe occasionally you'll bump into other people you can float along with. How's that for a metaphor?
Yeah, I like that. I like that analogy there. Yeah. So, Lawrence, you got to talk a little bit more about your writing process.
Well, the writing, I'll tell you, because I try and get together with David every Christmas. He follows my career because he knows that, if it wasn't for him, you and I wouldn't even be talking. But it's 2 years ago, we were chatting. I said, listen, you know, I've actually taken some of these online courses, and they all talk about you have to outline and you have to do this. You have to create all your characters first. You have to have all this paperwork. You have to have a whiteboard, and you've got it all broken down. I said, can I tell you how I write, and you tell me if, you know, where I'm on or off? And he said, sure. So I said, well, basically, I just sit down, and I have an idea, and I write as far as the idea will take me. And then I will shut that file and I'll open another script and I'll start working on that. And at some point while I'm working on that second script, it hits me, of course, that's where the plot needs to go. And I go back on the first and I keep writing on that. And I'll be getting ready to go to bed. And I say, wait a minute, I got a great idea. I'll just go down for a few minutes. And then a little while later, the dog is wanting to go out. And I open the door and it's morning. I've written all night long. And you just a complete time vacuum. And I go and I tell him, so there's no outline, there's no pre-writing. I just have an idea. I start knocking it out. And when I reach a plot point that I don't know where it wants to go, I just close that file and open another story. And I tell him this, and I said, so, am I on the mark? And he gets up and he comes around the table to me, and he gives me the best man hug I've ever had. And he goes, that is exactly how I write. And I went, gee, I guess I'm doing okay.
Doing something right.
So one time you and I were talking and you asked me, how long do you write? And I said, 12, 14 hours a day, every single day. And my Yale professor asked me that in class one day. He said, tell the other students how much you write. I said, 12 to 14 hours a day. And I saw people roll their eyes. And I said, every day. And he goes, why do you do that? And I do it for the same reason that David does it. I love to write. And so I haven't acted in over a year because that's all I do is write. And then, you know, I won Richmond last year, my family script. And then my other family script won the Northern Virginia Film Festival this year. So I just love to write. So when David came to me, David Langlitz, and said he wanted me to play the professor in Saving Robin Williams, I'm like, oh, man. I've got to put my actor cap back on. So it's been you consider that I've been in 100 different productions, and that includes commercials, both radio and television and everything. If you remember Michael and Sons, I played the plumber you don't want. And and so it's just, I've had so much fun, but you have to just let yourself go with the flow. And so I tell especially brand new actors, I said, you have to literally go everywhere, do everything, meet everybody, because you absolutely do not know when, you know, that your break will come. And so had I not taken the chance to go acting full time, then I wouldn't have been able to go down to Roanoke with the wonderful Erica Arvold, and then Darnell Martin was the director who cast me. And then go and meet David Baldacci, and here we are 6 years later.
There you go. Yeah,
doing there great. I go.
Meet
yeah.
Everything. Meet everybody.
Well, it's just, yeah, if you're not, you know, what I especially, what I love the most about the business of storytelling are all the stories you get to tell about the business. And, you know, as an actor, you're told, especially when you start off as a background extra, you're told, you know, never talk to the lead actor unless they talk to you first, and certainly never, ever touch them. So a couple of years ago when I was doing, well, actually it was the second film, first Wish You Well, and then I went up to New York and did Cymbeline with Ed Harris and Ethan Hawke. And I'm playing Ed Harris's bodyguard, so I'm always standing behind his left shoulder. And he turns around the second week up in New York, and he sticks his fist out. And, you know, this is my, you know, I'm still like a fledgling actor, and he sticks his fist out. I know what he wants, but what have I been trained? I've been trained, don't ever touch the lead actor. And I'm just staring at his fist. And he calls me a derogatory term. About something about not having bravery. And I just started laughing. Mm. And he said, what's so funny? I said, come on, dude. I said, it's 7 o'clock in the morning and I'm fist bumping Ed Harris. I said, you know, just shoot me because I don't think my career is going to get any better. So it's been a lot of fun. But every time you go on to a set, you get at least one or two funny stories every time you go. I mean, I've done two films now with Ethan Hawke, and he's just an absolute joy to be around. No ego whatsoever.
Yeah, you always tell interesting stories. I mean, I never forget your Santa Claus story, and then also you got your Bill. I'm sure you have some stories from Bill Tillman and the Outlaws, and then also I think you had something from House of Cards.
Oh well, you mean Mr. Spacey? Yes. Apparently, you know, I have played Santa Claus. I sent you a picture when I was Loudon, the town of Loudon's Santa Claus. That's always neat. They bring you in on a fire truck. But yes, no, I did four episodes of House of Cards, and then I got a phone call that they wanted me to come back in for another episode, which I thought, hey, maybe they actually want me now. And this was towards the very end. Before everything blew up in Hollywood. And before that, Mr. Spacey had been a typical lead. He was, you know, kind of segued off by himself. But he was very professional and friendly. But on this particular day, he was 6 hours late showing up on the set. And it was a Monday. And it was obvious everyone had partied way too much over the weekend. And so I'm just playing a Vietnam vet, and all I'm doing is saluting him when he gets out of his presidential limo. And on the very first take, we're doing a tracking shot, so the camera is behind him looking at me, and he does a facial gesture at me. And I actually felt brain cells explode. And I'm like, you know, I remembered hearing his story when he did Glengarry Glen Ross and how Al Pacino was actually off camera cursing at him to try and get him to have a reaction. So now Kevin Spacey goes on and I'm just standing there holding the salute and I'm going, what the heck was he trying to get out of me? Because all you got was a WTF look on my face. So I didn't think much about it, but then they ended the take and they said back to one, and he wanted to hold hands and skip back to one. I'm not embellishing any of this. So now the brain cells that were trying to grow back, they just gave up. And so now we're back to one and we go to do the second take. And now when he comes up, they're doing an over the shoulder of him. So his face is still off the camera. And now I don't know how else to say it except just say it. He puts tongue action into his facial expression. And I just about lost it right there because I just couldn't think of anything more unprofessional because I'm like, what is going on? And so I'm just standing there, and now it's 8 hours, so they call for lunch. And everybody clears the set except me. I'm in cement.
Wow.
I'm going, what just happened? And an actress walks up and she said, listen, I saw what happened. If Kevin's assistant comes over and asks if you want to go to a private party, don't go. And now she walks past me and I'm having this Twilight Zone moment because I'm like, what is going on? What is this? I mean, is this a joke? What is happening here? And now a second actress comes up because it's obvious that I'm having mental distress. And she goes, yeah. Didn't you know? And this is literally 3 weeks before Harvey Weinstein. It's right before. And my response is, no, what? And she goes, oh, she goes, well, Kevin trolls during the show. And I'm, boom, that was it. Whatever brain cells I had left were gone. I'm now just silly putty. And a PA, now the set's completely cleared, but I'm still standing there. I haven't moved. And a PA comes up and they say, the PA says, are you okay? And I said, actually, no. I said, would you please go get the set medic? And this is one of the reasons why I love being a SAG actor, is you do have protection that you don't have when you're non-union. And the set medic came over and he goes, there's something wrong. I said, yes, I never lie, always tell the truth. So I said, I am literally sick to my stomach. I need to fill out a sick report and I have to leave. And that's it. I literally walked off the set.
Wow.
And then literally 3 weeks later, Harvey Weinstein, and then 2 weeks after that, Kevin's own antics come out. But yes, when you're not prepared for it, and it's like when a buddy and I went down right out of college down to Key West and we scuba dived. And, you can tell when someone is eyeing you. And so when Kevin did that to me, that was right before the Me Too movement broke out. And yes, I did feel that I couldn't say anything because he was so powerful at the time. And it was a wonderful experience for me to have as a human being to realize, well, what? Just imagine how women feel, actresses, when they – it's just – horrible that somebody would do that to you. And the worst thing about it is, if you see me, the only thing I could figure out was that at that particular moment he was having a Santa Claus fetish. So I don't know why, but it wasn't until everything came out that I could finally post it this is actually what the idiot did to me. So, I mean, what I saw that day, which was different from what I've seen the other, is I saw a human being that was out of control. He was drunk with power, that he could do anything he wanted. And that's what you got from the Harvey Weinstein story. But his was just, Harvey's was just so creepy. But, it was just such a shame because Kevin has so much talent. And it blew me away for about a month. I couldn't go to auditions. I was just really thrown off my game that somebody at his level would do something that was just so sickening. And so I literally walked off the set. And then, of course, within 6 months, it was shut down.
Good grief.
Hey.
Wow, that's a hell of a thing to go through.
Well, it surprised me. Yeah. Now it's a funny story because literally I was just deer in the headlights when he was doing it. But the thing that amazed me is he was actually doing it on camera. And then being a member of the SAG, they send me all the films to vote on for the Academy Awards. And I have the episode, but I can't watch it.
At least not now. Well, I hope your brain cells grew back.
Apparently they did. If I won Richmond last year and Northern Virginia this year for my screenplays, but yeah, that was also kind of an epiphany moment for me in acting, where it just at that moment it wasn't fun to be an actor anymore, and I just empathized completely when the Me Too movement exploded. I'm like, yeah, it's not that bad, but I wasn't asked to drop to my knees, but to do that to another actor on camera, that's just beyond, unprofessional. So anyway, yeah, so it happened, but it certainly gave me great empathy towards my female peers in acting. So, but it is what it is. So it happened, and then his whole world came down, and they literally took everything away from him. So to go that high and then have it all yanked away from you, yeah, you know, that's pretty bad that you would allow yourself to go that far down. But to do it on camera, that's the amazing part to me. So anyway, yeah, so that's a great story.
Yeah,
but that's where I really threw myself into my writing. And that's where, you know, literally, Robin Williams will be the third SAG short that I've shot in 12 months. You know,
that's
literally.
That's amazing.
Yeah, last November we shot Ingenuity, and then we shot Videogenic in April, and now we're shooting Robin Williams in this November.
Okay. So talk a little bit more about Videogenic.
Well, Videogenic was... You write stories that are interesting, and I was always a huge Twilight Zone fan, and so this is a Twilight Zone episode. But it's basically Donald Lim who plays the lead character in it. We went down originally; we were going to shoot it in Clifton, which is where I shot my very first SAG short, The Handler. But Clifton has changed, and the people I knew were not there anymore. So we wound up going down to Occoquan, and I'd always wanted to. I also, this would be my sixth year as a film judge for the New York Film Festival, and some absolutely beautiful foreign films, especially out of Portugal, came in where they would open with a drone shot flying in over the Mediterranean Ocean. And I said, when I do my next film, I want to have a drone shot. So Videogenic opens with this just gorgeous drone shot flying down the Occoquan River. And the DP who's actually flying the drone just barely misses the train trestle that runs beside 95 going down south there over Occoquan. And then it comes in, and then they have a waterfall in Occoquan. So the aerial shot that comes straight down on Don when he's walking across a footbridge, there's this beautiful waterfall in the shot. The drone pilot is talking to me saying, hey, there's another waterfall further down the river. And I said, do you think you could fly through it? Because that would be a great. And he goes, well, if I do, I'll lose the drone. I said, never mind. Come on back. So it was wonderful. But we found the oldest house and the only house in Occoquan that is privately owned. So I didn't have to go through the town council. And it's all the way down at the far end of Occoquan. There's only one main road, and all the way down there. And we shot in that, and it was just wonderful. And I brought down Patrick Boyer from Baltimore, who's in his big boots. He's like 6'3". So he absolutely towers over Donald. And it was a great Mutt and Jeff shot when we did a two-person on that. But it's basically Donald is a camera buff, and he really likes old movie cameras, or as Patrick corrects him, movie machines. And he sees this triple turret, or as Patrick corrects him, triple threat, and he buys this haunted camera. Whatever he films, whatever he says when he's filming, that's what actually happens to the people that he's filming. So if he likes you, you're going to do good. But if he doesn't like you when he talks, you're in trouble. And there's a scene that was so good by itself because of Jared, the DP, really. I mean, I've never seen a cameraman that can do what looks like a jib shot or even a tracking shot, but he's doing it handheld. I've never seen a DP that has hands of stone like that. They're just smooth.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever see Videogenic, that opening shot that comes down as Donald's walking up past the stone wall and it comes down and then tracks with him, you would think that was an expensive mini crane shot. No, that's handheld. The guy's just holding it above his head, bringing it down, and then walking beside him. But you can't tell that. But see, I saw that because I did a cable series called Chance, which actually just got picked up on Uplift TV, so you'd be able to see me.
Uh-huh.
But that's what I got my third Best Actor award for, was My role is Bart, the drug-selling dry cleaner. So when you pick up your clean clothes from Bart, you get a little something extra in the pockets. And I met Jared. So when they had the premiere for Chance in D.C., and I'm watching, you know, the big screen shows it all. So if you make any mistakes, if a finger comes in the frame, you're going to see it on a 30-foot screen. And I watched this, and I had been on the set, and the guy's just using, you know, this little handheld camera. And I watched the quality, and it was studio quality shots. So when I was getting ready to do Vineogenic, I said, would you please shoot my movie? And he did. And it's just magic, and that's why it's doing so well. I mean, it's right now it's got 3 wins and 10 nominations, but we just got the 2 more for Clifton and Alexandria, so that'll make 12 nominations. So it's been an amazing 12 months. But anybody that produces films, even at the short level, there's a lot of stress involved.
Yeah.
So to do 3 of them, you know, in 12 months, yikes, what's wrong with me? So, but as long as you're having fun, I'm sorry.
As long as you're having fun.
that's the key. If you're not having fun, don't do it. And once you find people that you trust, you know, so most of my crew has worked on Videogenic and Ingenuity that's coming back and working on Saving Robin Williams. And I will tell you, a key to keeping your crew happy is feed them very well. You know, having been, I think IMDb has me credited as an actor for 76 films, which is still a lot. And one morning, Ed Harris turned around. Ed's a great guy. I've done 2 films with him, but he doesn't talk in complete sentences. And he turns around again one morning when I'm playing knife eating, and all he does is say 2 words, how many? That's it. He turns around and he goes, how many? And that's all I have to work with. And I'm like, dude, really, honestly, you know, send me an email or something. How many? Well, okay, I'm standing in a movie. How many productions? And at that point, it was just 80. Now it's 100. And he goes, that's a lot. And I'm like, he rolls his eyes, so I know he doesn't believe me. And I said, oh, do you want to hear my tagline? And this is my 2nd film, so I already know what he's going to say. He says, not really. And I'm like, oh, bite me. I said, okay, here it is. I'm the hardest working actor you've never seen. And he liked that. And he's got a beautiful laugh. But it's, so it's just go everywhere, do everything, meet everybody, and have fun. But treat them well. So in all these little independent movies I've done, especially up in New York, and, you know, you show up and all you get a bag of chips and a bottle of water, and that's your craft services. So, no, when people work on my films, you know, they get Chinese food, they get – and Donald M., let me tell you, anybody out there who's listening, if you're making a movie, you want Donald M. on your production staff. He is a great cook. He is a genuine asset to have on your film. Trust me, you want Donald M. On your crew. So, so Don will be cooking for us on Saving Robin Williams again.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So we're down to about 6 minutes. So quickly talk about Cardinal Virtues and Hell on Earth. How are they doing?
Oh, my goodness. Cardinal Virtues was my very first screenplay. And that's where I'd gone to an audition in D.C. And then I get a phone call from the guy. And there's a book on Amazon called From a Nigga, N-I-G-G-A, From a Nigga to a God. And if you've seen Shawshank Redemption and you've seen American Gangster, put those 2 together. And D.C. had their own American Gangster, and he was called MasterCard back in 1985 to 1994. And then he wound up being sent to prison for 10 years for murder, and he was at Lorton. And the research, the interviews I had to do with him in order to be write that, it is a Shawshank Redemption. You just wouldn't believe how bad Lorton Prison was. And the wall, which is what they called maximum security, was just horrible. So it took me about a year to write that, and that was my very first one. And now it's Cardinal Virtue, and it's getting interest because of American Gangster. but it is a local. And so you can actually find that on IMDb and also Facebook. So Cardinal Virtue, I think that's got 2 wins now for that screenplay. But yeah, it's been wonderful. And the Hell on Earth, hey, anybody that's been to West Virginia, if I grew up, my mother was from Beckley, West Virginia, which is the coal mining capital of the world. And Beckley is on top of a mountain 2 hours from anything closely resembling civilization. So drugs, alcohol, and incest, yes, they're prevalent in Beckley, West Virginia. And so because my mother was from there, you know, every summer we would go up to visit. And I had a cousin Butch. Everybody has to have a cousin Butch. You know, and you know, who would always make fun of me because I would talk. He goes, "Why you have such a citified accent?" And I said, "Well, I do believe I could change citified to countrified and point at you because, you know, you're dropping a lot of nouns and pronouns out of your speech there, buddy." But yeah, so I went up there, and the last time I went there is what really motivated me to write Hell on Earth, and it's basically, you know, whenever I write scripts, I really hate writing them for Caucasian leads. I really go to African American as my leads in my scripts. And so I make this. The guy's retired from D.C., and he gets a midnight phone call from this girl that he remembers growing up with when he was a kid in West Virginia. And he goes up there, and the story just explodes. It turns out she's really his sister. Turns out he has a half-sister, and the father he thought was dead isn't. He's actually a crime lord. And the guy is just having a mental breakdown, going back to his hometown after 4 years and finding out that, and the tagline for the story is, "Family, they will be the death of you." Yeah, so I have a lot of fun with my stories. And then the one you were talking about for Santa Claus, that was based on my Macy's Santa Claus story up in New York, the Herald Square store. And now that one is, you know, Three's Company, but four. So you've got four Santa Clauses that get involved. And this, my Yale professor says it's a Tim Burton film all the way.
Wow.
So, yeah, well, so, yeah, have fun. That's the bottom line. Have fun.
I wish we had more time to talk, man. This was great. It's been a pleasure, man. I really enjoyed our conversation tonight.
Well, post the pictures up there that I sent you, because especially the one of Santa Claus. And, yeah, thanks for having me on. Yep, anytime you want to hear stories, give me a call.
Absolutely, will do.
Okay.
Okay, man, well, have a great night.
Thank you, William. You take care. Bye.
Okay. Okay, now. All right, folks. So remember to do something for your career every single day. And remember to break a leg. Have a good night.
Under the dark, you pacify me. Hold my breath. Take me down, I won't fight. Beat of my heart, you drum inside me. Somewhere my death makes the sound no one can find. I